Hello and welcome to the Mystery College Podcast. Today we're here with Vaughn Sovereign. He is an expert hermeticist, holistic health coach, and is one of the most intelligent people I know in regards to holistic health and well-being. He's someone I've worked with as a coachee. He's been my coach before in the regards to health and wellness, and he's also a very high-level meditator and practitioner. Welcome to the show, Vaughn.
Thanks, Jake. Thanks for having me on. I'm really excited to share with you and go deep into some metaphysical conversation as well as talking about all things health and wellness.
Absolutely. So one thing that we've spoken to at length in the past, and we have also mentioned to me recently, is that the importance of detoxification and living and consuming more higher quality foods, water, nutrients is more and more important. Tell me about your experience with integrating healthier sources of food, water, nutrients. What does that look like?
Yeah. You know, our body is 70% water. So, you know, there's plenty of studies out there of what good structured water and how that looks within the cellular structure of our being and how that reciprocates and speaks in its essence. So the importance of water is fundamentally one of the very high up on the chart of importance, obviously. So making sure we have really good structured waters, and also with that, making sure that we put some electrolytes, so like Celtic sea salts or pink Himalayan sea salts, into our water to rebalance the minerals that we lose when we excrete them. So as well as when we sweat, or whether we urinate, or, you know, even sweating during the night. So that's really important. And then also, obviously, the rest of the cellular makeup is taking on nutrients, minerals, and aminos, and all the other beautiful nutrients that we need to support our being and our physical structure, as well as some of the more, I guess, more smaller proponents. And we can get into like the metaphysical aspects of that, and how when we really look at food, or when we really look at, I guess like what I'm getting to in this is, when we really look at food in the way that it should be looked at, is it's energy and information as opposed to calories. Because when we look at it from the vibratory aspect and the energetical proponents that we take on, it's really important that we are getting really good food, you know, fruits and vegetables, as well as meats and those kinds of things that are really well looked after, that are non-sprayed, because all of those chemicals we then take into our system, and our body has to then go through the detoxification process of eradicating that stuff. So realistically, looking at food and water, we really want to make sure that we're getting the most bioavailable, clean foods and waters that we can ingest and take on that information, so we can assimilate it properly, and our body then can eliminate it properly as well. We live currently in a time where we are bombarded with a huge amount of chemicals, whether they are electromagnetic frequencies, whether they are, you know, chemicals that are being sprayed, whether they are chemicals that are being injected. So the premise in which I always live by, and have lived by for a fairly long extended period now, is to realistically look for things and markers within ourselves that are going to be best for longevity in their essence. So when I do look at lifestyle, I look at lifestyle factors, as well as, you know, food and consumption of nutrition that we're taking on, and how we're also moving to make sure that those metabolic pathways are open.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And what are some of the markers that you look for in regards to longevity?
Yeah, so longevity is a big one, and there's a lot of talk about it at the moment, I guess, in the health and wellness industry. A lot of misinformation with it as well. I think There's a lot of supplementation taking place and not enough looking at, well, what are the things, the biomarkers that I look for, especially in and around symptomatic issues, that are suppressing or inhibiting our natural means to generate longevity. We have these chemical reactions within our body, and generally speaking, they can come through from, from intermittent fasting and fasting periods, as well as making sure that we're eating and supplementing. I won't use the term supplementing, because supplementing is a category that we can get into soon, but making sure that we're getting the right energy and information into our body to help the longevity chemicals and processes take form within our structure without having to take synthetic products to magnify it in that essence. So most of the markers that I'm looking for are, in and around sleep cycles, so around our circadian rhythm, how we are feeling before and after meals, and then also what symptomatic issues are we having? Do we have really dark patches in and around our eyes? Have we got skin irritations? Have we got bloating taking place? Are we getting hot and cold flushes? Are we excessively sweating? You know, those types of symptomatic issues are things that I look at, because they are creating more stress and also having more of a chemical input to then try, because the body's trying to do is detoxify and get rid of that stuff or eliminate that stuff. So I look at those kind of markers, and then we work back from there primarily.
Yeah, and so when you look at those type of markers and you look at indications that people are not at peak level performance in their life, like dark circle in their eyes, hot cold flushes, so what is the hierarchy of priority? Like, what do you first tackle when you're working with like a client? Or
good question, because this comes into a lot of Paul Check's methodology. And it's not just Paul Check's. There's enough study that's out there now to know that we live primarily in a mental space. So first and foremost is our thoughts and our association to God. So how are we talking to ourselves? What are we uploading into the bigger perspective of mind, right? So that's primarily where we start. And we really look at getting into the rumination of those thoughts, because those thoughts, we over a period of time, become beliefs. Those beliefs become emotionally charged, and as we know, energy and motion generates where our attention goes. So if we are thinking unhealthy things, our body's going to assimilate that information, because the body is the mind in action, and it assimilates that information. So the body then gets to contorted and pulled into different shapes as well. So, you know, sometimes we might be really kyphotic because we're sitting at the computer like this all day, and we never really stretch and open our chest to open the heart center, right? So this kyphotic movement into the computer is really closing our love center off. And then we have to look at what are the thoughts that are associated with that as well, because those thoughts primarily can be damaging to holding us into this structure, as opposed to being open and more expansive and more expressive and more loving. And that comes down to how much we really love in ourselves. So for primarily, first and foremost, is always our thoughts and our emotions, and also, you know, what are we thinking and sharing within that space within our structure, because that's going to impact us at the cellular level. So that's in the hierarchical structure of things, that's where we start.
Yeah, and that's the most important thing, and that's what's almost immediately within our locus of control, is our thoughts and how we respond to our thoughts. And then and I suppose that's like within our internal locus of control, and then following that there's external things that we can control outside of ourselves, like what do we consume? That's in the form of information, media, like nutrition, water. So I'm curious about how what's next on the list of priorities.
Yeah, so then we exactly, thanks Jake, we really want to get into fundamentally looking at what else are we consuming, then how is that information impacting us within our physical structure, and not just within our physical, because we get into the aspects of the layerings of the astral as well as the mental with this, right? So, you know, primarily, you know, are we watching the news? Are we just watching constantly negative input, you know, from the external environment? Are we, because if we are thinking negatively, we're only going to see things negatively on our external. Mm-hmm. So if we've got an internal process of something that's negative, we're only going to get the reflection of what that negativity is within us from the external environment. And of course, there's big world events taking place that we technically can't control, but where is our focus? So then with that, that can also lead into what we're consuming in regards to what we're reading, and then also the conversations that we're having with people and how they're mirroring and reflecting things that we need to see within ourselves that we might not be seeing, as well as the food that we're consuming, you know, especially in and around, you know, self-sabotage and aspects of procrastination. Generally in and around those two constructs, a lot of the time we're consuming, you know, really unhealthy foods because we just want to satiate ourselves with something that's now going to give us a biofeedback of why or how bad things are in certain aspects. So it's a really interesting construct to sit with, because when we are loving ourselves, when we are loving our environment, when we're truly in that state of gratitude and wholeness within ourselves, we're not really going to put in more toxic input because it's toxic. And so we want to live in that state of wholeness and well-being and gratitude. So we're going to eat more lively foods and fruits and whole vegetables as opposed to processed foods, because that processing aspect can be damaging within the structure. So that's realistically, you know, what we're reading, what we're eating, what we're drinking, how we're thinking, what conversations are we having with people, and who do we have in our environment? You know, there's the old Napoleon Hill construct, and that's, you know, look at your top five, your best five friends, and that's who you become. So if we're in and around people that are gossiping, we're gossiping within ourselves, and that's just the manifestation of the reflection of what's taking place within us.
Mm. Absolutely. And what do you find to be some of the central principles of success in relation to getting to a place where we are authentically seeking, we are living within our integrity, within our in an alignment with our higher values in regards to what we consume, in regards to the environment we place ourselves in, the people we surround ourselves. But what are some of the steps that could help people get there?
Realistically, it's a process, and it's one that just takes consistency and being honest with ourselves first and foremost. And I can sit here wholeheartedly and say, I don't do it perfectly all the time, every time. We all make mistakes, and it's a matter of how are we responding to those mistakes? Are we more loving to ourselves and comforting ourselves in that process? Or are we really beating ourselves up and really being harsh on ourselves? Because that's primarily what's going to dictate how the rest of it unfolds. So if I really break it down, it's consistency at its foremost, and it's also integrity. And those two things primarily are what uphold us to then want to live a more authentic life. You know, what are our core values, and really getting clear on what those core values are. If we don't have something that's that's supporting us in that sense from the, you know, in the aspect of those core values, then we've got nothing, and we're just going to have leaky energy, and we'll just say, oh, it doesn't matter, I'll do it tomorrow. And those little nuances that we tell ourselves are realistically where the shadow really lies. And that's wanting to keep us safe and wanting to keep us just comfortable in that environment with where we're at. And that's just not where growth takes place, unfortunately. Growth takes place of stepping into that aspect of fear, or leaning in, or leaning beyond our edge, so to speak. So again, realistically, is A, having your core values, really sitting with yourself and going, hey, what am I available for, and what am I not available for? And what does that look like from a characteristic point of view? And then realistically going, okay, how do I get out of this rut, or how do I stay consistent? And it's a matter of realistically planning out little things that become wins. So it might just be you have a little list for the day and you tick that off and you go, yes, that felt good. I've got all my little tasks done. Have three main tasks, get them done, and then look at the substitutory tasks after it. So that's a really good building block to start with, and keep it consistent for a minimum of 21 days. If you can keep it consistent for 21 days, now you're forming a habit. So I work with a premise of 21 days, 60 days, and then 90 to 100 days. So 21 days to form the habit, 60 days to formulate it. So it's now formulated, it's continuing, and then 90 to 100 days, which is technically termed in Taoism as a full gong. So now your whole lifestyle has changed, your whole consciousness has evolved to it being methodical in its continuation. So that in its essence, so if I summarize that, it's getting really clear on your core values, doing things consistently, so just writing down three main things to do each day that you really want to work on and ticking them off so you feel good, pat yourself on the back if you need to, and then maintaining that consistency over a duration of 21, 60, and then 90 to 100 days.
Yeah, that seems like a beautiful process for people to take on, to discover their core values, to make a choice to implement a habit over 21 days, then 60, 90, 100 days, and fully embody the person that they wish to become, so they can be in alignment with their higher principles, higher values. And so, and what does that look like for someone who maybe has a lot of doubts, fears, uncertainties, or maybe they never had someone in their life who they really looked up to and thought to themselves, oh, I want to be like that person? Or maybe they do, but they think, oh, I couldn't be like them. They're a hero. They're someone I look up to. I'm nothing like them. But they see something in themselves.
Yeah, and I think that's a really important thing for anyone that's, you know, walking the path, so to speak. You know, I tried my best not to get too caught on that term, but because it's like, you know, people just wanting to improve their lives and improve themselves, and we all had to start somewhere, you know, and that's a really important thing. To that question, I would say either look for a mentor that you want to work with, someone that is embodying and living these principles that they share with people, or if we are a little bit not in that space where we can afford to work with certain coaches, so to speak, I would say look up to those people that are embodying it and really study them to see how and what they do, because that's going to give you a really good indication of what their principles and their core values are. And that's primarily where we really need to start. Someone that has really developed a really good sense of healthy self-appreciation that's living their truth and that walks their truth. And I don't like to use that term too much in regards to it's my truth or anything like that, but they're living what they know to be true. And that's really something that's important. So if we don't have the means to financially seek out help, then those just in that little summation would be to look up to those people that we do and to then make sure that they have their principles and their core values, as well as they're living and embodying the things that they speak about the most. That would be the easiest way for most people. I know that we all have idols and we all look up to certain people, but really we want to make sure that we're looking up to very healthy and very well structured models in that sense, I guess. Yeah,
so people who are living in complete alignment with the values and principles that they espouse, that they preach, or that they speak about embodying.
Absolutely.
The work shows for themselves. And then that's more material to study for folks. So I'm curious too about your thoughts on fitness and how people can start embodying their body more often. I think that's something we tend to look over a lot. And recently I read somewhere that for 95% of the population that's over 30 years old, that they'll never do a full sprint again in their life, like and never do a 100-meter sprint again in their life, 95% of the population. Mm-hmm. And to me, that seems devastating.
Yeah. Longevity is very important, especially through movement. If we're not moving our body and constantly keeping and challenging our body and ourselves, we're moving towards death more than anything. Our body's not getting the cortisol hit that it needs to get. It's not going through anabolic aspects that it needs to really reproduce certain hormones. So we're doing a disservice to this amazing vessel that we get to walk around and experience, you know, this beautiful earth and be able to do the practices in which we do and connect in a multitude of ways. So if we aren't training and challenging the structure of this vessel, then we're losing a lot of the important aspects that help us grow but also expand. And we need to be breaking down tissues, and we need to be exerting ourselves in ways that's going to challenge us. It's just how the body evolves in that sense. And that helps with, you know, when we are doing exercise and movement, it's going to also help with our digestion. It's also going to help with our mental clarity. It's going to help with our breathing. All these proponents that encompass life, they're going to really become enriched. So again, we live in an information age. There's so much information that we can take on, and there's a lot of misinformation in regards to certain aspects as well. So it's important to use discernment when we realistically want to fundamentally follow certain people and I guess information in that sense. So again, looking and getting into, you know, who is moving properly? How do you move properly? Who's giving really good, valuable information on movement? And then really discerning, you know, how much of that do we need? So that, you know, roughly within a week, it should be anywhere between, you know, minimum 2 to 4 sessions a week we should be trying to optimize ourselves, even if that's just going for a nice long walk, you know, a brisk walk in the evenings or first thing in the morning. Just getting the body moving, getting the heart rate up, getting the anabolic and the catabolic aspects to take place, and you know, it's gonna aid in a multitude of ways. So movement's just such a big one, and you know, realistically, if we are sedentary too often, we allow the mind to run too much. So when we are outside and we are getting into Mother Nature, we're now getting our visual aspects or visual cortex to be expanded. So now we're getting and looking further within our structure as opposed to something that's short-sighted, where we then start to then allow the mind to run too much. So the mind and the body itself needs to be stimulated in a multitude of ways. So, you know, if we are in pain and we're doing something, we really want to, again, look at, you know, how do I help evolve myself in this sense so I'm not in pain anymore? And that's obviously working with someone that can correct your physical structure in a way that's going to align you to a more purposeful life, so you can live a healthy, happy life that's not of pain and discomfort.
Yeah, and that makes me curious when you talk about pain and discomfort. That's something that's a very loaded word for people. And I'm wondering what is your experience or sense of what is pain and what is discomfort? I think for some may have those experiences or terms mixed up and may feel that the chronic experience of discomfort that they're feeling or numbness may be pain or vice versa.
Yeah, that's a really good question. So the difference between discomfort is something that's just uncomfortable. So we may have like a niggling injury. We have an association where we generally will always try and move away from pain. So the body then starts to then morph itself to then move itself into a way where it's more comfortable. So it's really fascinating when we get into the structure of how the anatomy sits, but discomfort in its essence is just something that we're not comfortable with. So that also could be, hey, that's taking place, I'm just not comfortable with that. And then what can take form with that is it can eventually show up as pain later on. Pain in its essence is a really deep state of emotion, and that's just going to get proliferated in our body. Now, we can, you know, we could be bending over and we could be experiencing really deep pain in our hip or in our back. That's different to this is just uncomfortable, and that's just, you know, that aspect of discomfort. So when something's uncomfortable, it just means we're not comfortable being around it. So sometimes we also have that within our body, right? So we will then generalize and be like, oh man, this just feels really uncomfortable, I can't sit properly. And what we'll then generally do with that is we associate that with pain. And with pain comes the emotion of pain. So that could get into, you know, when we look at the construct of how emotion sits in the body, it's very interesting because that then gets into the aspects of what's the emotion and the sense of feeling. So the sense of feeling is either going to be painful or it's going to be uncomfortable. Then we have to then look at the association with the emotions, because energy and motion will be getting blocked in and around that place of pain, or generally it's going to have more of a free flowing. So with discomfort, we can do things in discomfort because the energy can still flow, so that channel can still be open. But generally with pain, it's just like, oh no, that's too painful, I can't. And even with that, right, we tell ourselves, I can't do this, I can't do that. And we tell ourselves the story, and it's in that tiny little part of it where the true essence of our healing lies. Why are we telling ourselves? What's the emotional charge that's now taking place for us to be stuck in that place where it's too painful, we don't want to look at it? Whereas with uncomfortability or discomfort, it's, oh, this is really uncomfortable, but it can still move and there's still some energy moving through. So the degree of emotion or the level of emotional understanding is going to be higher than what it is in pain. So we can have a really painful experience, say let's just say a car incident where we may break our back, we may break our hip, when we really get into the emotional charge that's stuck there, the sedentary aspect, that obviously is going to be a very dense baseline. Whereas when we have something like we might sprain our ankle, but we can still move and we can do these things, it's also giving us an indication of, hey, what am I not looking at? And what's the emotional aspect that's underlying? What am I telling myself? What have I been telling myself for it to lead up into that injury and to get this feedback back now? Because like I shared earlier, the body is just the mind in action. So for my part, that's what I look at between the difference between pain and discomfort. And they're just both emotional charges. One's very base, very dense in its essence, and the other one's more lighter and I guess more of a lighter substrate than from an emotional point of view.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I'm curious too, when people are implementing these skills of mindfulness or mind body health integration, there's going to be experiences of discomfort and then in some people's cases there may be experiences of pain whilst they're going along their journey to 21 days, 60 days, 90, 100 days in order to have a transformation in their life in whichever direction. So what are some things, or opportunities that people can find those gaps, those moments where they are having negative self-talk or they are experiencing discomfort and pain? What are some ways that they can console themselves or even work through the pain, the discomfort as they're progressing towards their goals?
Yeah, good question. This leads into like somatic understanding of how do we break that pattern? You know, how do we break the pattern of telling ourselves, oh, it's not a big deal, I'll do it tomorrow, or it's not a big deal, I can eat this chocolate today, when I've already told myself I'm staying off sugars altogether. So this gets into more somatic release work. There's some beautiful techniques out there, some really basic qigong exercises, some tapping we can get into, some shaking aspects, more somatic release. These are very base level. We can also get into more depth of practice where we get into the constructs of the shadow and the black and white mirror of the soul aspect. What are we telling ourselves and why are we telling ourselves these stories? So we can sit and go deep into the mental construct and how that's emotionally charged within the astral, or we can get more into the physical and allow it to shake through with a really deep sense of releasing it through the emotional charge, so into the astral, as well as what we're telling ourselves. So say for instance we've made a really conscious decision that for 21 days I'm not going to have sugar, and we get 7 days in and we just get this little sugar craving, we're like, I just want to have some chocolate. And you know that it's a Cadbury chocolate and it's got emulsifiers, and we can get deeper into the stuff that can be implemented in the processing mechanism of that. But we know that there's just stuff, but we've just told ourselves, I'm not having sugars for the next 21 days because I want to see how my body responds and how I feel mentally, physically, and emotionally. So as well as my astral sense of feeling as well. So we then sit with, why am I telling myself this? So this is the first marker. Why am I? So it's questioning the story in which we're telling ourselves. Now this can get into, we can get into food cravings, we can get into fungal parasitic aspects that can override our internal processing from the gut and from our body aspect. But, or we can break pattern, right? This gets into like a little bit of NLP where it's break pattern kind of scenarios. So we monitor and we go, ah, I see you and I see what you're trying to do again. So we can get into more somatic release where we go into shaking or we go into tapping mechanisms. And these are really, really beneficial, especially like getting your feet on the ground, on the grass or on the beach, and just shaking. And noticing that we've told ourselves it's okay to have chocolate just for this one time. I'll finish off the rest of the 21 days. But you know, the old saying is 21 days to form a habit, one day to break it. And you know, once we break it once, we have to then start over again. So it's realistically holding ourselves accountable and utilizing certain tools that are going to help in the process of achieving that goal. And we could say, oh, it's not that big of a deal. And that's just another story we're telling ourselves. But what we're doing in this process is we're actually breaking down the distrust that we've built over a really extended period of time. And we're actually unlocking the trust, because at our highest level of our highest being within our structure, trust is quite high, right? So it's a high vibrational sense of feeling. So when we continuously break our own trust, because we said we were going to do this, so we're breaking our word, which is now breaking our trust. How can anyone else trust us if we can't trust ourselves, if we're constantly breaking our trust? So what we're doing is we're breaking down distrust, the distrust that we've built over a period of time. And that is what then leads us into achieving our goals. And even though this might be just one small little facet, when you finish that 21 days and you go, wow, I did it. I haven't had sugar for 21 days. The sense of accomplishment and feeling that you get is such a heightened state of experience. And that in its essence, now you know how to trust yourself again. I did it through, when I caught myself telling myself, it's okay to have this chocolate, it doesn't matter. But it does matter in the biggest scheme of things, because you're letting yourself back down again. So what I did in those processes was I shook, or I did some tapping to really get out of my mental construct and get out and shift my emotional state in that process. This physical form is one of the most best things we have to literally shift the emotional state as well as the mental state. And it's something that's really overlooked in a lot of the teachings that I've come across along the path, and I've had to integrate for myself, because we put too much emphasis on just sitting and practicing. Just sit and practice, just dissolve it. You know, we can dissolve it into the Akasha, or we can just dissolve that thought construct. But what I've noticed over an extended period of working with a multitude of different teachers out there is a lot of teachers aren't embodying in certain practices, and it's being stuck in their body. So their body becomes morphed into these really uncomfortable positions, and that's emotionally charged. So we can think that we're dissolving these thoughts, but our body tells the story. Our body always leads. Our body's always giving us a deeper fundamental understanding of what's taking place from a physical, astral point of view, as well as a mental. So that would be having a toolbox to know how to realistically help you get through into that, you know, breaking down of distrust and rebuilding. It's not so much rebuilding, but learning to trust yourself again. And keeping yourself accountable on that path.
Yeah. Absolutely. And learning to trust yourself again by setting out, all right, I'm not going to eat chocolate, I'm not going to eat sugar for 21 days. And then each day, each moment, and every challenge that you have to yourself is an opportunity to regain your own trust, because that absence of something helps you in that process. And then once you've rebuilt your trust, then you can create a foundation for the life and to be the person you want to be.
Yeah, absolutely. It's, you know, like I said, it's ticking off those little things that generate a big snowballing effect. And, you know, just getting a lot more confirmation as we more digress on this. And it's something that's been probably my biggest takeaway over the last few years, is realistically utilizing these tools to break down all of that uncomfortability and distrust that I've created, that I've allowed to come into my life from people, you know, telling me I can't do this, or, you know, people giving me bad feedback and me taking it on board and going, oh wow, I am that. And you know, everything's in its essence is mirroring, but it's also polar as well. So, you know, yes, there is a part of that that's true, but also majority of the time you're not doing that. So it's really what view or, you know, what lens are we looking through at that time? And how do we break free from looking at it from being so narrow-minded in its essence to then having full spectrum view and really building upon that to see more and to own more of ourselves? And that's been, like I said, that's been probably one of the biggest takeaways for me over the years is having that toolkit to really utilize and break free of those subconscious, unconscious sabotaging patterns and really reestablishing trust within myself.
Yeah, that's brilliant. And that really spoke to me too when you were speaking about how, you know, at some points in our lives we allowed distrust to come into us from peers, from society, from media, and from our environment, and from also when we were at certain ages in life's milestones in our life where we may have been very gullible or really vulnerable and, you know, not had the defenses or ability to hold space for ourselves or protect ourselves. We may have heard messages when we were 5 years old, 8 years old, 12, 15, and then even into young adulthood and so on. So I'm wondering too, how this kind of plays into working with different parts of ourselves and if there's parts of ourselves we need to integrate from different stages of our life or different moments, different potentially traumas, or just life stages.
Yeah. And look, there's a lot out there at the moment, especially with shadow work and, you know, really working on healing the masculine and the feminine and going into the dynamics of those polarizations and how to really work through that. Or we've got more, you know, the big part I look at is how do I want to feel? How do I want to feel within my body? Do I want to go back into the past and have to relive and reaccount all that stuff? And that's not to say not to look at it. Of course, we can shift timelines by sitting in meditation and going back and healing those parts of ourselves that didn't get the love or admiration, or we took on those viewpoints from society or our parents or our peers that, you know, that we held at such a high,
regard.
Thank you. So looking at those people and we're looking at them with such high regard that we're like, oh, they've said this, and now you feel like you shrink again, and I'm not living up to what I should be, or I'm not living up to, you know, their values and their principles or whatever that looks like for us, and so we shrink more, right? And we take it on in a way. So it's really interesting because, yes, that stuff's very beneficial to go back and love ourselves in those periods and honor ourselves, but it's more about the sense of feeling that takes place and how we associate our thoughts with that. Because if we can look back at it and see it from a different vantage point, as opposed to, hey, they did this and I'm now the victim and blah, 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 then we're only going to continue to be the victim, and we're only going to continue to take on all that stuff and victimize ourselves in that process. So, and unfortunately, what I see a lot is a lot of people stay stuck in the shadow, or stay stuck in the healing, the shadow. And it's this rumination, oh, this is coming back up again, I need to work deeper on this. And it's like, what you're doing is you're now reliving that same experience again without elevating and having an alchemical process to transmute or transform away from what it is that's being generated and created back in that space. from the past or, you know, from the present, however that looks. So realistically, it's looking and monitoring what is what you're experiencing and telling yourself right now, because what you're telling yourself and experiencing right now is also correlated to what you've experienced when you were younger. So if you can shift the known parts now and have a process of going, okay, what I'm experiencing is, let's just say I'm experiencing shame or grief because they're very low on the vibrational scale, and going, wow, I feel this deep core essence is like, I'm experiencing shame. And that may have come from when you were really young, or it may have come from a past life. That stuff's technically arbitrary in its essence, because it's, even though it's impacting you right now, you have a choice whether you wanted to allow it to continue to living from that space, to continue to living from that place and living from that energetical state. So when we catch it and we go, wow, this is the thoughts that are associated with this sense of feeling, and this is the sense of feeling, I feel really shameful. I've done so much bad in my life. I'm living from that place of victimization. When we can break instantly from that and change the patterning and the information that we're telling ourselves and alchemize it in a way that, hey, I don't need to live by this anymore. I take full ownership and responsibility for what took place. Whether or not it was my fault, I can take ownership because I've allowed myself to live with it for the last 20 years. Now I'm taking ownership. I'm not allowing this to affect me in any way anymore. So now that we take ownership, there's now a sense of empowerment that takes place. And every time we catch ourselves in that place of wanting to ruminate back into that safe space where we feel comfortable, because that's what the ego will do. It's like, no, just come back here. It's okay. You know, we're just going to sabotage a little bit more. We're going to procrastinate a little bit more. What that's doing is it's reaffirming the synaptic pathways within our structure that's now holding us back in that place. Whereas when we go, no, I'm taking ownership of this. I own this. I'm not living from that place anymore. We now live from a more elevated state. So now shame doesn't have the same control over us as what it used to. And you might be living from more of a place of like, let's just say thankfulness, because, or appreciation, because if we're to go from like, say, shame or guilt or whatever that lower vibration is, and we go, let's just jump straight into gratitude, that's a really hard thing for most people to do. When we're in that state, it's really hard to jump that massive scale and get into gratitude. So the tools I kind of like to work in is like, okay, well, what's a little stage down from gratitude? Not to say that we can't get into that state of gratitude, but let's look at like appreciation, because we know what it's like to be thankful. Someone's just done something. I'm so appreciative of that. So then we get into, what does that feel like? What does that feel like within ourselves? When someone does something, it's really cool. I feel lighter within myself. Now I'm not caught on the story of feeling shameful and regretting things that I've done. So that's primarily what I look at with these things, is how can I shift the sense of state? Because that's gonna alleviate me ruminating back in that past and taking ownership and control and rebuilding that trust within, or, you know, breaking down that distrust within ourselves. So, because that's the continuation of those little things over an extended period.
Yeah, absolutely. And once you start shifting state, then you can also use that to shift the state of feeling distrust as well. And then the more experiences you encounter and the more times you reinvigorate your trust by following through with habits or things you dedicate your time to, the more that can reinvigorate that, and that your baseline default state can be more elevated, more higher, and you can be connecting with higher vibratory principles. And one thing that really stood out to me, and something I recall that from when we spoke to another time, was there's a three word affirmation that you felt was really powerful, and we discussed it at length, which was, I am worthy.
Yeah. 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 It's, when we really get into that space of really feeling our worth, knowing that what we're experiencing isn't our true essence, that really breaks us free into knowing that we are infinite and we are divine by nature. I really feel we're moving and shifting into a kind of a bit of a dangerous place in certain aspects with, you know, I feel like there's some aspects out there that people are like, well, I am God and blah, blah, blah. But it's we're made in the image of, and we are divine by nature, right? So what I'm more getting to or leading into this is knowing that we are worthy of always, we're always worthy. It's breaking those constructs that have literally held us down or created a big ball of negative energy around us. And that's what's keeping the continuation of the experiences that we have. But when we realistically break free of that distrust that we've built or that negative energy and those constructs that we've developed over a period of time, when we really break free and we start to live from those higher vibrational states, we really get so much closer to the divine, to God, to source. And that is something that's so empowering, because when we live from that state of empowerment where we really feel worthy and we really feel whole, you can, illnesses and diseases will literally just disintegrate from every cellular aspect of our structure. And when we really work on that, on those thoughts over a period of time, they become powerful positive affirmations that we're telling ourselves. So we can only live from that elevated state of divinity. And that in its essence is, I truly believe, is what a lot of the mystics and, you know, Yeshua, Gautama, Rumi, and all the mystics before us have realistically shared, is when we really come back to wholeness, to know that we're worthy, that is to be divine. And that is our right. That is our birthright to live from that state.
Yeah, that's beautiful. That's beautiful. And we're getting close to the hour, Vaughn. Is there any last pieces of information that you'd want to leave viewers or listeners with?
Yeah, I'd like to just quickly touch over the importance of detoxification and like heavy metal cleansing, those things. And just a little, just touch a little bit on supplementing as well. There's a lot of stuff that I will share about in regards to, I see a lot of people over supplementing with things that they wouldn't have a clue if they're deficient in or not. And that can create dysbiosis within the cellular structure itself, within our structure. And it does more damage than good. So if you haven't been testing to know what you're deficient in, to know how to then bring those levels up, don't supplement. And so that's first and foremost. The other one is detoxing. Even though the body has a natural mechanism of detoxing, we really need to help clear the terrain within us. And that what that does over an extended period is allows the body to regenerate properly. When it's got old debris and it's not getting rid of toxins and it's not cleansing all the mitochondria that it needs to shift and change, it becomes really stagnant, so that the organs and the endocrine system themselves don't have the opportunity to realistically heal themselves. So roughly most organs will take anywhere between 28 to 52 days roughly to regenerate themselves. I take people through really deep intestinal, colon, and antifungal parasite transformational cleanses and detoxes and heavy metal cleanses. And they're usually around 6 to 8 weeks in length. Now, when we do that, our body and our cells and our organs and everything that makes up this physical form, our ligaments, our tendons, our fascia, our muscles, everything becomes so enriched with a high vibration that you you'll never experience true health until you do it, realistically. And it's so vitally important, especially on the path of service and especially on the path of practice and development in regards to allowing and helping open these faculties, these gifts that we get to unlock on the path of hermeticism. So this vessel is, when we realistically look after it in its purest form and really purifying, because even though we're doing the purification processes when we sit to practice, we really want to make sure that we're purifying this physical vessel, and we need to do it in the aspect of, you know, our thoughts and our emotions, and then also the information that we're putting into the body as well. And, you know, if we're like going back and jumping quickly back to the very start, if we're taking on and we're watching, you know, death and destruction, what are we going to have internalized? Death and destruction. So, and that's not to say we can't enjoy a movie, or that's not to say that we can't enjoy the chocolates and those kinds of things. It, everything in balance, but with, when we detox, we really want to go through a really deep purification process with it. So we really want to make sure what we're doing during these periods is, you know, monitoring what are we consuming from, you know, things that we're looking at. So that would be one thing that I really highly suggest for anyone on the path that is realistically walking the path and really wanting to develop themselves, is if we can put ourselves in a high vibrational state, but then to really honor this vessel, we realistically need to clean and clear the terrain out and stop putting so much toxic stuff in. And that also goes into the aspects of medication synthetic products in that sense. Not to say that acute care and allopathy is not beneficial, but when we more look towards functional medicine and alternatives, where we're harmonizing with high vibrational things to really go through the purification and the detoxification periods to help excrete and get rid of the dead debris, that's where a lot of the pure magic really takes place.
Yeah, beautiful. Thank you so much for sharing, Vaughn. And is there anywhere that people can get in touch with you, follow you, maybe reach out to you for consulting services?
Yeah, so primarily right now, just Instagram and Facebook, just my name, Vaughn Sovereign. I'm working on the back end of my website at the moment. I have some really cool, very amazing products that will be coming out within the next couple of months, which I'm really excited to share. I won't digress too much on them right now, kind of keeping them a little bit hot, close to my chest right now. But when they do come out, I'll share them with you, and really excited to really get this stuff out, because it's really, really powerful and important to share with everyone. So yeah, primarily just Facebook, Instagram, and also X or Twitter.
X or Twitter, or is there an email to get reach you at? That's good for you.
Yeah, just vsovereign@gmail.com.
Awesome. All right, thank you so much.
Thanks, Jake. Really appreciate the chat, brother.
Sounds good. We'll talk soon.
Thank you.